Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360-degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's Klaviyo.com. Welcome back to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO of Wavebreak, the email and CRM agency for high growth D2C brands. If you're worried about iOS 15, just hire us and you won't have to think about it, and we'll help you drive even more revenue from the email channel, even without open rates. Why? Because we focus on data, and we focus on strategy, and we focus on creative. Everything you need to thrive in a post-iOS 15 and 14 world. You can learn more about what we do at wavebreak.com. And you can check out our blog posts on iOS 15 and how to best combat that also at wavebreak.com. I don't know why I read that in like an ad voice, but I did, and I hope you enjoyed it. Today we've got Topher Mallory on the show, CEO of Mexicali Blues. They are a mix of retail and e-commerce, which is really exciting. So we chat about that. We chat about the marketing side, what they've seen since iOS 14. We talk about his team and how he retains them, wellness, tactical things they do in their meetings, how he leads from 30,000 feet, what he's currently seeing across retail, how they translate what they're doing in store to e-commerce. And we also talk about some nitty-gritty email strategies that work really well. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Topher.
Thanks for having me, Dylan. Looking forward to chatting about retail and everything else as it changes day by day.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're in 2021 now. Last year was a crazy year. We'll get into that. But first things first, what's your quick background and what's Mexicali Blues for the people who might not be familiar?
Mexicali Blues is a brand. It is based here in Maine, where it was founded by Peter and Kim Erskine some 33-ish years ago. That's some quick math, 33 years. We are sub 10 million in revenue. Our website makes up almost half of our sales. We have just an unbelievable staff of 60 to 80-ish people, depending on the time of year. Here in Maine, we have 5 brick and mortar stores that are along the coast. They give us a great opportunity to test things out and then double down on them in our e-commerce pursuits. It's by and large women's clothing, but we have a growing men's line, a really fun kids offering. We also have jewelry and accessories and some home goods. Things like curtains have popped into existence and help us with what to do with extra fabric. We make everything from scratch. We do import it. We work with artisans in 7 different countries. and we fancy ourselves responsible. We give back 1% of revenue every year to those countries that we import from, as well as our beautiful state of Maine. And we do that around community is the big driver for our philanthropic efforts. But that is what Mexicali Blues is and does. And if I had one word to explain it, I would say it's experience. We try and provide an experience for people.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for getting us up to speed. So walk us through what you've been up to and focusing on these days now as CEO.
Well, like so many, I am celebrating that we got to 2021. And now that we're here, it feels like a whole new host of challenges. I think when you look at things as problems, you get mired in a negative stance. And one of the biggest takeaways from last year was really trying to pause and as best we could look at it from a positive viewpoint. As hard as that was at different moments, you know, we really at Mexicali Blues took a lot of stock in how we had gotten to where we were. And for 2020, a lot was around how to make sure our supply chain was still intact, opening our retail stores in a safe and purposeful fashion so that it was not only right for our employees, but also right for all of our consumers. And everybody is looking at things differently. And it's hard to accommodate everybody, but we're doing our darndest to think that way. And I would say not much has changed in those two things. It is still a day by day on how to adapt or adopt what is new in store. And with supply chain, making things in countries like India, Indonesia, and Thailand have come with a lot of challenge in this moment. These countries are anything but recovered. They're still in the trenches of battling COVID. And we are just trying to help the artisans we work with, as well as make sure that we have the products our consumers know and love. So for 2021, if I had to boil it down to a couple things, I would say supply chain is top of mind from a logistics standpoint, from a consumer, employee, and artisan standpoint. Wellness is absolutely our lead objective. And for marketing, which I know is where you're coming and hoping that I can probably bring some nuggets of insight, it is a lot about all the changes with cookies and platforms, as well as instant gratification. Things slowed down a lot during COVID, and we had a lot of challenges with the parts of e-commerce that we felt like we had finally nailed down, like shipping. Who would have thought that would be such a juggernaut in 2020 and still in 2021? We are continuously looking at now UPS and trying to better understand how to set realistic expectations with both the provider and the consumer. So I think I got kind of wordy there, but
no, beautiful intro. I mean,
what we're looking at.
Yeah. And that's perfect to set us up, because I want to dive into like each one of those as kind of like three core topics of what you went over. So I guess first things first, we're about a year out of, I guess, 3 months from 3 to 4 months from, you know, initial lockdown. I mean, what was that like? Because you guys were heavy into retail before in terms of making up a pretty large percentage of your revenue. Walk me through last summer and what that looked like. And what were you doing previously on e-commerce? What was that split like? And then how did you scale up e-commerce? And just walk me through, you know, March of last year till now.
I'll try and break that down into a few parts. But if I had one word, just what came to mind the minute you said last year, this time, or a little before, and I'm going to go with March, because the one word or two words I would use are probably worst nightmare. It was mid-March when the writing was on the wall here in Maine that Janet Mills, our governor, forward-thinking, did an unbelievable job protecting Maine, and it was very obvious she was going to be an early shutdown for retail, hospitality, etc., which in March in Maine, it isn't necessarily the worst period of time to miss. Tourism isn't as large as, say, missing out on summer would be. But for us as a brand, and not just a pure play online or just a retailer, we're making and working with artisans, and in a 12 to 24 month, in some case, product life cycle, meaning from when we order to when we actually put it on a display in a retail store, March is the one moment during the year that we're highly leveraged and we have all of this inventory landing. And so not only did we have stores shutting down, we didn't know how to run our warehouses safely. We had all of this inventory that was either landing or in transit. It could really not have been a more perfect storm for us to have to endure. And we did what was best for our employees first, which I can say I'm incredibly proud of, not only how we reacted, but how our staff stood by us. We offered people what they wanted. We tried to provide wages and content jobs for people that wanted to stay employed, people that wanted to be furloughed or weren't sure what they wanted. We tried to offer as equitably and as equally as possible the option. So not many people furloughed. We quickly had our plan in place and a huge amount of e-commerce support. We also had some legislation that allowed things like e-commerce to sort of be to be considered essential. And I say sort of because I wouldn't consider them really essential businesses, but we were able to provide safe warehouse environments and people could work. So we slowly turned things back on in early April from a retail standpoint as well. We moved a store, we tackled some project we wanted to, and we're planning on in 2020 anyway, but we didn't reopen our retail stores until the first days of June. So we had about 2+ months to think, and we implemented some curbside pickup technology. We saw an incredible growth, like many brands that were able to provide a great e-commerce experience. We were already well over $1 million in sales and had a really good e-commerce experience. And in our opinion, we had replatformed Shopify recently. It was easy for us to drive a lot of our retail employees into other content or helping with order fulfillment or things like that. So it was a pivot, to say the least, but it was one that we just took each day as it came, tried to understand how we could safely provide both work and sales. And in June, when we were ready to reopen or given the green light to reopen, we had a good strategy and just took it with a shortened schedule and grew back into 7 days a week and pretty accommodating, 9 to 7-ish for open hours in some locations. We've actually tweaked those quite a bit in 2021. One of the more interesting things I think is like a micro takeaway is that I think consumers are more apt to have a willingness to sort of change to your availability. And with it being so hard to find employees right now, there isn't really a second option. But I think I'm getting down a rabbit hole and I'll come back up to 30,000 feet, which is really where I lead from. And I would say that in June, when we were able to reopen, that we spent a lot of time still using Zoom, still using Google Meets to regularly meet with our store employees and to do it as a company and to try and holistically, regularly ask people a simple question of, Dylan, how you doing today, man? And that just asking somebody in whatever way they wanted, how they were doing, he, she, they, them, whatever the platinum rule was for that person, to try and just ask them how they were doing. And it made a huge difference. And I know that we have both retained our employees historically, but we've also had, I think, a lot of success in this last 12 to 18 months where it's been really hard by thinking about our employees, taking the time to ask people how they're doing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, most people don't even ask. I mean, you ask the average person like, hey, how's work? It's like, they're just going to complain. And they're probably not going to say, hey, yeah, they asked me how I was doing. Because we all know, it's, you know, for everyone, it was a really difficult year. So I love how you guys did that. And I want to dive into, you know, wellness and how you guys tackle that over at Mexicali Blues in a second. Before we dive into that, just some interesting trends on the retail side too, because I know you guys are seeing that. So a couple things, like one, like, are you guys seeing retail pick up, and like, how's that picking up compared to what it used to, especially now? And like, are you seeing a decrease in e-commerce because of it, or how's that going across the business?
I think we're in our infancy for e-commerce, so I wouldn't say I'm going to have any incredible analytical insights from, you know, being a representative of women's fashion. We're seeing such intense growth, but our size is small. We reopened, like I said, in June, and one of the biggest limitations was Maine started with a host of square footage based capacity pieces. So we were only allowed 50% of our capacity, then 75%. And it was only in the last 3 months that we were given the green light to go full capacity. We saw intense growth, obviously, with each of those increases. But I'd be curious to know, and in, you know, a true apples to apples test, what it would have been like if you could have provided a safe experience for 100% capacity, which I'm glad those limitations were there. I think it was a very smart way to slowly reopen. Today, we're seeing a lot of excitement within our stores. I think here in Maine, with summer upon us, and regardless of what everybody is saying, people are trying to fit two summers into one summer. And there are a lot of people shopping. It seems like here people are being courteous, and we are able to provide a good experience in store, and it's probably gonna shape up to be one of our best summers ever. Online, we did see some recent changes as stores reopened and people felt safer and vaccines were more widely accepted and available. Relative to last year this time, yes, we are absolutely seeing less online traffic. Is it based on our sector or our brand? I don't think so. I think that for us, we saw a hiccup, like a lot of people, with cookies, operating systems, all sorts of recent tweaks in the last 5 to 10 weeks. We are seeing definite changes with consumer behaviors, but overall, we are also internally making huge changes in where we are spending our time. We shifted from a company that would really solely look at top line revenue and how to mirror scale our audience. We were all about customer acquisition or new customer base, and we've shifted and still got our eyes on how do we grow. But at this moment, we're trying to provide a better experience for the people we've got before we start scaling again. We want to look at returns. We want to look at checkout. We want to look at how we're using our promos. Are they going to drive the KPIs that we want to see, and also the ones that we think are best for our consumers? I don't just want to offer free shipping to lure in new people. I would much rather offer discounts to thank all the people that placed orders in March and April of 2020, or came back to stores this year and also bought Christmas presents last year online when they didn't feel like they could go into stores or didn't want to go into stores. So we're trying to think a lot about our goals rather than just purely how to get people through checkout. It's about more than volume or more than audience or traffic. It's a lot about conversion rates and loyalty and lifetime value, those types of metrics.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, what have you guys, is that part of like seeing updates like iOS 14 roll out and it affecting your acquisition efforts, or is that more of a trend in general? Or did you look at last year and you grew really fast and then it wasn't as profitable as you hoped? Or like, what led you to moving away from top line revenue and focusing on more fundamentals inside the business for a little bit.
It first started well before COVID. I don't remember who it was. I've heard it said a bunch of times. I don't know if there's anything behind this number, but I think it's one of the pivot points for an e-commerce company. Somewhere around $750,000 to a million in revenue, there is absolutely an ease to becoming profitable. And once you get a taste of that profitability, I don't know as though that's the moment you really optimize towards it, but it's certainly a moment where you start, for us at least, we started really thinking about, okay, rather than just casting this broad net, now that we have some profitability, we are in a place where we can pause for the cause and think about this. What do we want to do? And that was the first place that we started thinking about the 80-20 and what products are really being sold online and how do we go deeper into them and provide the colors and stop fighting out of stock issues. You know, we finally optimized an ad and now all of a sudden we're out of inventory. So we started thinking more strategically and big picture. From a growth standpoint, you talked about iOS and last year, and there's so many little factors that move that needle on revenue or number of orders. And we absolutely saw, I think, what a bigger brand would be able to pinpoint or maybe even pivot from better with iOS, as well as all the different conversations about cookies. We, like so many, had a lot of growth compliments of Facebook and being able to take our customer profile and mirror it, whether that was taking our Facebook audience or taking an email list or just taking demographic qualities. And that, I'm not sure it's dead, but it seems like most people are changing quickly from, we're going to just mirror our audience forever and ever. Like I don't even think that's going to be available in the not too distant future. So for us, it was the minute we started hearing about those things, we did start thinking about how do we do a better job with loyalty or a better job with our own email flows and understanding our own consumers and trying to kind of go back to what made Mexicali 33 some odd years ago. And that was grassroots marketing, in-store, exceptional experiences, and going above and beyond, really being hospitable to the customer as though they were, I think, at a cocktail party or hanging out with friends listening to music or whatever your sort of happy place is, providing that kind of experience. And online now, I was about to say, I think, and it's because we're still really floating a lot of ideas around and trying to understand how to play to who we are. And in store, there's a definite smell. There's a definite way we meet and greet, and there's music, and there are things that just you can't do the same way online. There's no way yet to, at least not that I'm aware of, to create a smell when you open a website, for instance. But we're trying to think about packaging. We're trying to think about the experience and how to make it unique and more Mexicali.
It's really tough to do that. I mean, the smell is everything, right? When you're even like when you're in a strip mall and there's a Subway, it's like you just smell it. Even though like, yeah, you know, we know where that stuff, that food comes from nowadays, it's still a very alluring scent. But yeah, no, I love all the reasons that you're coming around to it. And I love how it's coming back to the brand too. That's super important nowadays, especially as with these updates to pixels and, you know, the more competition in e-commerce and like anyone can start a brand. It's like, that is the differentiator. It's like to not just sell products, to sell a brand. And so by evolving your e-commerce presence to really communicate your brand, like you are in store and you're differentiating yourself in the real world, I mean, that's going to be a key to continued success. So like, what are some things you're doing online to execute on that and to, you know, deliver that Mexicali Blues experience on e-commerce?
One of the best tools is one of the oldest for us, and email. Email is still, I would think, the easiest place for most brands to deliver on that. We spend a lot of time on the content creation side, We use Klaviyo for our behind the scenes technology. And it's great because we split up email into two thought processes, the checkout experience, which I can talk about, and then the email marketing piece. And Klaviyo has been a good fit because they've got a lot of best practices baked in, and they attract a lot of agency business because they're also, I think, pretty high end in what you can do through the platform. There are very few ideas we've come up with and not just been able to do it with the toolbox that's there in our Klaviyo subscription. So for the email list, we're doing a lot to ask the question, to engage, to look at more than just open rates and click through, but you know, how much fatigue? What, you know, we're all now emailing every day, or I think everyone should have a list or a segment that they're emailing every day. And I do think that's a smart practice. If that audience really wants to see you and they're not unsubscribing and they're still looking at the email, then, you know, it's the logic of, well, if you're using Gmail or anything like it, it probably already is in its native setting, separating out all the promotional emails. So, well, when I go to my promotional section, it's just brands I want to shop and they're all there. And so if Mexicali Blues is one of those brands and we're not emailing you every day and you open your promotional email and we're not in the, you know, the top portion, that however many are above the fold, then we're not top of mind. And then for the people that is annoying, how do you quickly tailor so that you stop being annoying and you hit them with the right frequency for how much they're into your brand, and try and slowly but surely move those people that are first-time consumers to brand evangelists and try and give them value that's more than what is it that consumers want generally, right? It's free, 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 and then a discount. What is it, like the top five or six things are all just discounts or free shipping or some version of that, where it's tricky, but there are places that I truly believe every brand could deliver something other than a promo or some free thing and create that value add. For us, it's certainly yoga and wellness and health are related, but they're not primary. They're little things we've found with our brand that do work. All right, so one of those nuggets that I think for us was an aha moment happened early on the content side, and it was providing an astrology forecast, something that it started with an intern, and then the employee who really grabbed it by the reins, this woman, Megan, just grabbed pieces from different astrology blogs, et cetera, and then started to create one just for Mexicali. And now we have regular ghostwriting and partners providing astrology forecasts. We don't sell in this email. We don't do anything other than providing cosmic connection to astrology. And there are people who have opted out of this part of our email, but by and large, it is one of the most opened emails for us. And we try and just keep it on point for what it should be, a fun insight for people that are interested.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's what I always tell people. It's like, don't just send emails that are promotional all the time. Send the good stuff too, so that people are trained to open those emails and to look for your emails, so that when that promotion does roll by, it does even better than before. You know, just like send emails you'd want to get as a consumer. So if like you're your ideal customer of your brand, you know, you really understand your customer and you send them that content, they're probably getting it elsewhere. I mean, it can be really effective in building community and building brand. And, you know, those people who are getting those 70% you open to, if you segment those people out, you send them an offer, it's probably going to do just as well if you send it to the entire list.
That's right.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, let's talk about, we've got a couple of minutes left. So let's dive into team wellness and leadership. So one thing you mentioned was like, you like to operate from the 30,000 foot view and lead from there. And what does that look like? And then at the same time, you've also mentioned before we hopped on, like, you know, a lot of your team members have been around for a really long time. So in terms of perspective, the company, I think you said, has been around like 30 something years, and you have a lot of people who've been with the company for over 10 years. And so you obviously know a thing or two about retaining talent. What does that look like? And how do you think about that? And let's talk a little bit more about the wellness side of how you're developing and focusing on that in your team.
So I use an example of the meeting that we run weekly. We have a Tuesday meeting. We use Google Meets. Everyone turns on their camera, unless you're in the car or just can't, but 12 to 16 people with some level of managerial responsibility are all sharing a win to kick things off. Then the meat and potatoes in the meeting is people reporting on their area, whether that's a store, marketing, IT, what have you. We wrap up with a short Q&A, anything ancillary or just that we want to go deeper on. And then the true wrap up is a goals section. And the hope usually is that the goals from the prior week will resurface in the wins. They don't always, but it's a nice way to get everybody thinking that way. And there have been people who have said this is corny, and there have been people that have not worked out at our company, and it's been a pain point for them. And I think it's fair to say that most people in the company actually really dig it, even when it seems repetitive. You can say anything you want. It can be, I had a great walk with my dog this morning, and it was beautiful. My cup of coffee was perfect. Awesome, Topher. And it can also be, you know, Dylan coming in with, I had a great podcast. I interviewed someone who really provided some nitty-gritty insight. I'm retooling my interview questions based on this. So that's the hope. The hope is that a lot of the wins are things that are company-based. But, you know, the last 18 months, it's been a lot more about, I walked my dog and it was awesome, or I saw some family, or I got to give someone a hug. That's just as important at the end of the day. And wellness can be as simple as that. It's, again, just asking people how they're doing. So the goals, though, is something we drive towards, and we try and keep ourselves accountable. We don't take traditional notes in this meeting, but we have an agenda and it gets updated. So the goals are right there for everybody week over week to see.
Yeah, and that's huge. We do something similar, and we're fully distributed, fully remote. And we actually tried taking it away, and like taking away like just the general wins. And then also we've pivoted it before to like, oh, business wins. And it's so funny. It's like the business wins really don't do it for you. It doesn't sound great to say, hey, I checked off all my tasks last week, or, you know, I did X, Y, Z. Like, even if you love what you do, it's kind of like, well, it's like, who knows? Like, maybe that's a win, maybe it's not. But it's actually really incredible seeing what it does to like build culture. And you just like learn about people too. And people love talking about what they like. So if they're talking about a win, they feel great. And, you know, we all know how a lot of people listening to this podcast, right? Like, you're really focused on personal development and improving yourself. And so you're familiar with something like gratitude, where it's like, you know, if you're grateful, you feel better, you operate better. And I feel like we learn all these things as like to be like a high performance, powerful CEO, but we don't always translate those things to our team when it makes total sense to do so. Just by asking a question like that is simply, you know, in a meeting, you know, you're forcing them to be grateful for something, whether it's just a walk with a dog or a podcast interview, which, you know, this interview is one of them. I don't know if you're talking about yourself, but we can go with that. It's really incredible how that works. And then also too, the, you know, the people who didn't work out from that, probably a good thing. All turnover isn't really that bad, especially if they don't align with the vision and the culture you're trying to build, which obviously this is the vision and culture you're trying to build. So that's a really awesome and tactical example.
Yeah. I think it's the same for consumers too. I think that a lot of things we've been talking about are related to just that. You know, we try and ask the question of consumers and provide the right experience, but we're not going to be the perfect fit for everybody as a employee experience or as a consumer experience. And we always just try and exit those with dignity. So, you know, we always have embraced books like Hug Your Haters by Jay Baer that just do a wonderful job of depicting how to come back and try and meet somebody where they are a couple times. And you know what? If you're not going to be able to appease them or provide the right product for them, it's okay to break up with a consumer. You just need to do it gracefully with dignity. And sometimes the worst reviews on our product pages turn into actually the best reviews because of how we respond or because what another consumer might learn from that review. You know what? This garment does not run big. It runs small. This garment runs big, whatever it is. And other people will see that we change how the product's described or how we retake measurements or we try and take different photos of it. I think there's a lot to be said for not getting irritated and trying to meet people where they are and listen. And again, just gracefully break up if you're going to break up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a good point too. Like, and think about that in terms of retail, like retail is kind of easier to be better to the person because the person is there in their flesh, like just in general, to deliver a better experience. Online, we've just been seeing numbers. It's like ones and zeros for the last few years. And back 2015, 2016, you throw up a Facebook ad, it does really well. You can do transactional e-commerce, but now as everything's getting more sophisticated, more competitive, it's people at the end of this. And you know, the more you can build your experience around people and not so much around tactics and channels, which I think people get too caught up in, you know, that's really when you end up building a strong brand that's going to stand the test of time on e-commerce. Which it sounds like that's exactly what you guys are doing with, you know, the culture you're building within your customers as well. And tapping into a channel like email, like it's one thing to use email and send a lot of email and make a lot of revenue, but also to do it in the way you're doing it, I would say that's really advanced from what we see. And that's exactly the right way to do it.
Yeah. We love things like the checkout flows, which I didn't get into, but once you have somebody in, whether it's, you know, a flow with someone who's bought something or a flow with someone who's loaded up a shopping cart, it's more than just trying to remind them or hit them with a discount. It is about trying to learn and provide the right experience. If we look at, I keep using the word flow, I'm assuming that's familiar for everybody listening. With Klaviyo, yes, it is how they lay it out as well. So we all internally talk about it that way. But I think that those flows are always an evolution. And sometimes like it's easy, like you're saying, the ones and zeros, the binary, this is rocking, don't mess with it. You might still be able to learn something, or this flow isn't working. Well, it doesn't mean it's not necessarily a group that we should be trying to optimize. Maybe we're trying to optimize that for something other than an end sale. Maybe we're trying to optimize it for better feedback on why they bailed on a page or why they ditched that shopping cart, or, you know, why they're complaining about something that was ordered a week or two ago. I mean, this was definitely how during COVID we picked up on some of our early failures with the US Postal Service was through analytics, not bad reviews or customer service phones ringing. We actually saw some early indications within our flows. But one of the things I want to talk about with customer service that I think is on point for what you just said, it's really a hard position to develop. It's also a really hard one to watch from a leadership standpoint, but in-house customer service is, in my opinion, key. And I say that as I've been trying to outsource it for years and years. And I think at some point we will certainly outsource a portion of our customer service, but it won't be until we have an amazing FAQ and an amazing way to filter the questions or the consumers that just need, hey, when are our stores open? And they're not willing to listen or find that information online, or when's my order going to be there? But, you know, the old Zappos model of, if someone is calling you, that's only going to happen 4 or 5% of the time. They're picking up a phone and calling you. You should jump at the opportunity to talk with them. Even if it's a sour conversation, it's an opportunity for you to just wow one of your consumers. And oftentimes you're gonna create a lifetime customer. And it's a really challenging, I think, early moment in e-commerce growth to start allocating hours for picking up the phone and customer service, but that's also a huge marketing opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the podcasts we did a few months ago, or I mean, who knows at this point, it might've been a year ago since March last year, it's all been a blur. But I forget, the one piece of advice was like, just pick up the phone and then you'd be surprised what you learn. The quicker and the more you do that, the more you understand your customer. And then like getting that data, which like doesn't come from a spreadsheet, you get so much more insight and information that really will propel what you're actually looking for, which is the growth. and just improve the business in general, which is great. So yeah, great to hear that as well. And yeah, we're starting to run out of time here. I think that's a good place to end. I mean, we've covered everything from retail to team wellness to the latest updates to marketing with Facebook, tactically what you guys are doing with email and how you're playing it on the a more advanced level. And I mean, we could keep talking for hours. There's a lot to do here, but it's getting to be that time. So where can we go to learn more about you, Topher, and Mexicali Blues and all the other startups you've got your hand in nowadays?
Awesome, Dylan. Well, MexicaliBlues.com for sure. You can learn a lot more about our products, about our philanthropic efforts, about our employees. You could also, if you're interested in the other businesses that I have founded or I'm a part of, SplitRockDistilling.com, which is a 100% organic distillery, or RoyalRoseSyrups.com, which is an organic line of non-alcoholic or non-alcohol-based drink mixes, and a really fun way to have a complex or sophisticated drink without consuming any alcohol. If you're interested in just talking with me, feel free to email me, Topher@MexicaliBlues.com, or you can check me out at Topher Mallory on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on. We'll be sure to link those all down in the show notes below. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Topher.
Dylan, thanks so much for having me. It was absolutely a pleasure.
Now, listener, before I sign off, stop me if this sounds familiar. Your email marketing is stuck. You feel like you could be doing email better. You're not generating enough email revenue, and you feel like you're leaving money on the table. But you don't have the time to figure email out yourself or do it on your own because you have a business to run. Imagine this. Imagine not having to worry about leaving money on the table with your email marketing. Imagine not having to figure out what to send, when to send it, how many emails should look, what automation you need, what segments you need, how often you should be contacting your email list, or just worrying about sending the next email. You don't have to worry about any of that. Imagine having peace of mind knowing that your email marketing is generating sales in good hands. At Wavebreak, we help Shopify stores maximize their email marketing revenue. That's it. We don't do anything else. And we've created a system called the Wavebreak method that, number one, makes you less dependent on Facebook or other marketing channels. Let's say something bad happens. Facebook says, "See you later, Shopify store," and they just completely kill your ad traffic overnight. You don't have to worry. You don't have to stress because you're good to go because you have a cushion of email revenue. You don't have to worry about what your wife is going to do or if you're going to be able to make rent or if you're going to be able to pay people because you have this cushion of email revenue to rely on. Number two, the second thing this does is huge, and it's how stores scale from 7 figures to 8 figures to 9 figures. And the secret is repeat purchases. The Wavebreak method gets rid of one-time buyers and increases repeat orders. Number three, it keeps your email list engaged. You don't have to worry about Black Friday and beyond. We'll figure out the ideal amount of times that your list needs to be contacted to maximize revenue, and then we'll execute it for you. If you want to learn more about this system and how we can work together to apply it to your business, go to wavebreak.co to schedule a call with me. And I'll personally send you my calendar link and we can chat one-on-one. Now, I don't have unlimited time to do these calls. I can only do a couple of them per week. So if you want to get your call, go sign up at wavebreak.co for it as soon as possible and we can talk about how we can work together. Thanks for listening to this episode. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to get notified of new episodes as soon as they drop.